So we start to unpack those tolerations and find ways to, frankly, eliminate them or reduce them at the least, so that when our attorneys are working towards their vision, they're actually, we're doing it by simplifying, not by adding more complexity. And when we, when we stop tolerating certain things, it means that we necessarily are going to be raising our standards.
Welcome to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing for Law Firms podcast, featuring the latest strategies and techniques to drive traffic to your website and convert that traffic into clients. Now, here's the founder and CEO of 10 Golden Rules, Jay Berkowitz.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever time this podcast finds you, welcome to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing for Law Firms podcast. We have a great guest today. Vanessa Shaw from Business Growth Academy is with me, and we'll get to her in just one second. Real quick, if you don't mind, if you've listened to a few of our shows and you like them, please take 2 minutes and either click the subscribe button on YouTube or the follow wherever you're on iTunes or Spotify. It helps us if we have a lot more subscribers, we look a little bit better to our potential guests. And we get great guests like Vanessa Shaw today. A couple things about Vanessa. She'll tell us all about her background, but she's from Britain, and she will be the second amazing person who coaches law firms who's on our podcast. And y'all have probably heard a couple interviews with John McCarthy, the law firm profit coach. And John is just amazing. And he came and he spoke at TJR Live, our live event. And I know y'all are going to love Vanessa. And with that, no further ado, Vanessa, welcome to the 10 Golden Rules podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited for our conversation that's going to unfold. So thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, before you get into the Business Growth Academy, tell us how you got there. Tell us a little bit about your background and working at the UN and all the amazing things you've done.
Right. I know, very different background. So yes, I'll quickly piece it together because otherwise it leaves open loops in people's minds. I am British, as you can, as listeners can hear. And I studied languages at university in England, French and Spanish and economics. Honestly, didn't have a clue what I was going to do with them. And ended up getting an opportunity to go across to Switzerland for a 3-month temporary contract to work in one of the UN agencies. And it was actually a big exhibition building arm for telecoms back in the day. And I was miserable at the time. I'd gone into the City of London to work in underwriting and reinsurance. I was following in my big brother's footsteps, thinking he was cool. I was so miserable. I was so bored. I was like commuting up to London 4 hours a day because it was 2 hours door to door each way. So when this opportunity came for Switzerland, frankly, I just needed a ticket out of what I was doing. And I hopped on over there. And then 21 years later is when I actually left Switzerland and moved to the States. I actually live in Arizona, and that happened 12 years ago. But the little bit of the UN kind of story there is, started on a 3-month contract. And I worked, as I say, in this exhibition arm, which was very exciting, around telecoms and everything. And then I hopped into another organization. And literally probably did hop, because all those organizations are very close together. It's like a big network. And I got myself a position with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, which was, I really loved that organization. I had a couple of roles there that I found very, very rewarding and challenging. One was actually scheduling the airlift into Sarajevo during the Yugoslav war, and working with different military around the world. Again, demanding, but like super fulfilling. And another was actually going out to the CIS republics, like the former USSR, and teaching governments about the difference between asylum law and refugee law. And the link for that is kind of important, is I was the non-attorney traveling with a group of attorneys inside of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And that was honestly my first time of kind of being around attorneys. I was the coordinator. I was having to do all the logistics. We were going to all these different republics. And I just kind of was intrigued, you know, it's like, wow, they have like really cool work that they do. So it never took me down the path of I want to become an attorney. But years later, I was reinventing myself. I'd actually given up the work in the UN, my husband's career had taken off and he had a big global career. I wanted to do the family thing and did the stay at home mom thing for 9 years, which is very challenging actually as part of a career.
Yeah, that's
move.
Full-time work.
Like real full-time work and, you know, not a lot of pay, not a lot of free time. And then I was reinventing myself. And I knew full well I wasn't going to go back to the UN. Two of us in the family would have been too much. And I'd just had too much freedom at that point. And so reinvented myself as a life coach back in the day. So we're talking about 20 years ago now. And focused on health and well-being. And that was kind of my starting out place because that's what I knew. And it was a place I felt confident that I could start my own practice. And very, very, very early on in that journey. And again, the real story is there was no ink on a coaching certificate. I wasn't even like fully qualified, but I was, you know, putting it out into the universe that I was ready to take on clients. And I actually met the husband of one of my female clients who was looking for some help around just being in peak performance. He was dealing with a lot of stress. He was traveling a lot. And of course, I'm like, you know, building my practice in the early days. And what I didn't realize is that he was the managing partner of Europe's largest law firm at the time. And he was... So all of a sudden I've got this, you know, attorney thing that's kind of starting again. Yeah. And we would just, you know, actually I have incredibly fond memories and we're actually going to be meeting up again in Europe this summer when I go back. We actually haven't seen each other for years.
Great.
For me, I would actually take him out kind of in the pre-Alps. He wanted to work out, walk, like download. He'd say, just ask me some questions. I just need to be like, you know, prepare myself for the week. And I loved that time with him. I found it really, really stimulating. He later told me that it was like the highlight of his week. And about probably 6 months in, he said, you know, I'd like to invite you in to come and actually pitch to the law firm because what you're doing for me, I've got attorneys that are worth an awful lot of money. They are burning out. They've got a lot of stress. A lot of stresses that are going on outside of the firm as well. And I really believe in coaching. I really believe in giving support, you know, like in a holistic way. So are you up for flying into London and pitching to our top partners and the equity partners to see if we can launch a coaching program? And again, we are talking, I say, nearly 20 years ago now. So coaching in Europe, you know, coaching in the States was already probably about 10 years ahead. Coaching in the UK had started. Coaching now in Eastern Europe, which ended up being like the most of the countries that I was working yeah. with, was unheard of. So this was very, very new. And I pitched it. We got enough buy-in to kind of get the beta program started. And then I realized as well that with all the countries that I would be dealing with and the jurisdictions, I was like, shoot, I'm going to be traveling an awful lot. And that's not what I want to do. I've got young kids. My husband's still traveling the globe. And so I pitched it to them as a virtual coaching program. Again, unheard
of. Way ahead of your time, yeah.
Right? Unheard of at the time. Yeah. And so my claim to fame that probably can't be really, you know, supported anywhere, but I'll grab it is I believe that I created the first major virtual coaching program inside a major law firm. And it really took off. It was, again, it was a lot of fun. Partners, of course, back in the day, you know, very skeptical. What is this? Who's this woman? She's a non-attorney. How can she help us? And then they, you know, gradually got on board with, it's really great to have a sounding board. It's great to have somebody from the outside that thinks very differently. And so this program took off. And so what started as peak performance ended up really morphing into executive coaching. Because once you're the coach,
I want to get into the coaching in 1 minute. I just, before we get too far away, I want you to tell us one amazing story from your time at the UN.
Oh, one amazing story. Oh, gosh. Let me think.
I'm sure you have dozens, but, you know, what's it like airlifting into Sarajevo in the middle of a war?
One amazing story, but it's the one, the minute you ask that question, actually, and it's a really sad story. And it was one day when we felt like we were doing some really good things, right? You're airlifting in supplies, journalists to keep, you know, cover the, you know, the news coverage, and medevacs. So people that needed to get out that were in desperate, desperate need. And actually one of my really sad stories was that I needed to get a young girl medevaced back in. We'd medevaced her out, and she was actually dying. And so she was probably an 11-year-old child. And I was having to work with NGOs and everything, and to make sure that we were basically flying a child back home to be with her parents.
Well, that's sad. Nice.
And that one, it felt obviously meaningful that you're making that contribution. But of course, that was one of those ones that really hit home of the, like, the seriousness of what we were doing.
And tragic that you couldn't make the save, you know.
And absolutely tragic.
Well, thank you for all your many years of helping people, because you told me some of the other stories, and it's fantastic. So another question I had from that time, why were there so many attorneys in those UN roles?
So this was just to do with the nature of the bureaus that I was working for. And they would have what we call desk officers. And many of them had legal backgrounds. And again, because of the work that I was involved in, especially once we got into the refugee agency, now they need, you know, there were a lot of people that needed a legal training in international law. The immigration law.
Because you're moving people and supplies and
exactly
around and dealing with countries and politics.
Yeah, so that was the sort of the link.
I can't even imagine the complexity of it all. Great. Well, you know, what's one of the things that you took from that time that you really started to apply to helping law firms? And let's get into some of the really tangible tips for law firms.
Yeah. So I would say, in all honesty, there's not a lot from the UN side of things. I mean, there is, but, you know, that these are very, very different worlds. And for me, there was many years that have passed in between, right? So I think the big piece that I can bring to the table from that UN piece is definitely a level of diplomacy, a level of dealing with many, many different cultures, ethnicities, languages. You know, just that difference that for me was so normal every single day. That's what I'm, you know, that's just the air I'm breathing, which for other people isn't. So I think I see the world through a very different lens because of that. And then I would say, once I started to really work with the, you know, attorneys, so I've now got this, you know, coaching program that we're building. What was really interesting then, what I discovered for myself, was that there were really two types of attorneys. There were the attorneys that actually loved doing the law, and they really prided themselves on, you know, the practice of law. And then there were the attorneys that were more of the rainmakers. And we used to call them like intrapreneurs, they weren't, you know, entrepreneurs, because they obviously had their own book of business that they had to grow and retain and everything. But it was those rainmakers and those entrepreneurs that I really loved working with.
And yeah, we talked a little bit about EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and they're the visionaries, right? They're the rainmakers, bring the work into the firms, and then they typically have a partner who's the integrator, who, you know, we used to call a COO, a chief operating officer, or something, you know, director of operations, who makes stuff happen on a day-to-day basis and holds the visionary at bay with all their ideas. Like, I just came back from a conference and I've got about 20 things I want our firm to do. And they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
You do what?
You're the
one, but like the other 19 we'll have to save for our rock discussion next quarter.
Totally, totally. And so, and then what was really happening is, so A, that I started to discover there was a certain type that I really, really enjoyed working with. They wanted to build teams. They wanted to get bigger cases, right? They wanted, they kind of thrived off like the complexity of learning. And then I was just naturally learning a lot around their business development because, again, they're sharing, right? Their ideas, I'm a sounding board. And so, you know, I was then helping them with business development. Some of them were wanting to go off into China and open new markets or off into Russia, like really big things. So I think there was that side that I found just fascinating. But the other side of it, which is still the place that I bring a lot to the table with today, is attorneys, you know, I mean, A, they're not taught how to grow business in law school. So that's one thing. So if the internal training is there, right, in to develop a book of business, but they're not in this entrepreneurial world in the same way that, say, you and I are, and things like systems like EOS, right, and all of those, the books that you and I probably like devour.
Yeah.
The other piece is I discovered as well that like soft skills and personal leadership is like the massive, massive missing link. Everything was about technical skills. And so as I was now inside and developing this program further, and I've become acutely aware of their stress levels, the stress that's affecting performance, lack of EQ, or let's say lack of EQ, or you know, emotional intelligence, like real opportunities as they were going to be growing up in their roles. These were pieces that were just completely missing and absent. And as I say, people would often call them like these soft skills, as if, well, we don't really need to worry about that. But yet they were the very things that were getting in the way. So this became, you know, I was then developing, I love to test. It's like, if they were open to it, I mean, like, are you open to having some new discussions? Coming kind of like test some ideas here so that we could bring things like emotional intelligence, resilience, stress management into the organization as part of that program.
Great. And your sweet spot today is dealing with women attorneys, right?
Yes. Yeah. So
how did that evolve, and what are some of the skills that you teach for women that, you know, has become your niche?
Yeah. So again, interestingly, back then my practice would have been 80, 90% men. When I moved to the States, I was already like wanting to flip and really start working with a lot more women, partly because there are just some very unique, you know, challenges that women have, certainly in terms of leadership roles, stereotypes. You know, in there's so many concerns about how women are perceived when they want to get ahead. So with guys, and again, we're talking general right here, of course, there are always exceptions. But, you know, for generally speaking, for men, it's totally okay, more than okay to be ambitious, right? It's like you are rewarded for that. Women, we are.
Especially in this country.
Right, especially in this country.
Because, even, you know, like you, you know, you came from the UK, I came from Canada. And, you know, it's almost like it's not expected and it's not classy to mm-hmm. be ambitious and to be networking was a swear word when I grew up in Canada. And here it's just, you know, fantastic, the entrepreneurism, but it takes a little time to adjust.
Totally, right? And it's that go-getter and everything. Yeah. And as I say, obviously there's cultural differences, but, you know, women that really want to go for it, you know, I mean, this is where I say that ambitious becomes ambitious, right? They are perceived poorly. And then women start to think that they have to be a certain way to get ahead because most of the role models have been male, and particularly in law firms. And I was privy to conversations with women where, again, they were very stressed. They might have been dealing with aging parents that, you know, like they may have had young kids. They're juggling it all. And again, they couldn't admit like what they were dealing with, and they were really having to like wear a mask the whole time, but behind the scenes, like there's massive impact to their stress and well-being, because if they would admit it, they're perceived as weak and then they can't get ahead. And so now when I'm working with, you know, women law firm owners, which is really, you know, our speciality niche, A, it's very much about sort of unprogramming, right? A lot of how they think things should be. Some of them may have come from big law, right? Yeah. Or, you know, they've seen those models and they're very much wanting to create, you know, businesses that, firms that support their life so that they can be mother, they can be wife, they can travel, they can be unplugged. They don't have to have all of this stress. The other big area as well that we see, and by the way, when I say those things, it does not mean, oh, and that means you pay yourself less, you're taking less revenues. No, because this is this other big area that we work with is around money, particularly the mindset around money, which again, women have inherited very different scripting. You know, again, the classic male provides kind of deals with the finances. Most financial programs have been set up by men, and women think differently. And then there's a whole emotional component. So we are working with our women to be like, it is okay. Like it's more than okay to be financially secure, financially empowered, but we have a different approach to finances so that it makes it more, let's say, palatable for the women that we work with. And again, even though we work with incredibly smart women, the majority of them will readily admit that, you know, they feel scared of their finances, you know, they don't understand them, you know, they've got bookkeepers and accountants that are giving them reports. They're like, I get my stuff, but I really don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. And again, it's back to the business side of things, that great attorneys, but some of these other skills have got some great opportunities.
Just for the record, lots of male visionaries speaking for one, also don't love the meeting with the accountant every month. But you also touched on it because you've got one of the greatest podcast names of all time. What is the name of your podcast?
Thank you. So Get Rich Without Being a Bitch.
Oh, I think we just got muted on YouTube. Yeah. Get Rich Without Being a Bitch.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. And you talked a lot about it. Matter of fact, I met with an attorney yesterday and she said she was at a firm and she, you know, had worked for many years and finally got pregnant and the firm was not treating it well. I won't try and put her words. And, yeah. And she, you know, she, that was the final straw because she was also being paid about $20,000 less than a male counterpart that she considered to be, you know, half as good as her. And
yeah.
And his did half as many billings. It was his quantitative, according to her. So I definitely heard the story of many of your clients yesterday.
It still exists, right? You know, look, again, a lot of people say, oh, there's so many women opening businesses and this and that. I'm like, yeah, but you, like, let's look at the stats and let's look at what women are earning compared to men, even when they're in business, and how many women are hiring compared to men. And everything is very skewed. And so for me, again, that's the conversation I'm really passionate about changing because it runs way deeper than just our own mindset, right? We've got a lot of unraveling to do and women need like some really good role models that they can kind of be fully themselves and build a firm or a business on their terms and live a phenomenal life as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had some amazing women on this podcast and I've had the pleasure of hearing the story of success. I actually think Emily, who introduced us from Back Office Betty's, you know, go yeah. listen to that show, and Dan Neff is a great business coach to law firms as well. So, you know, coaching, a lot of people, you know, still don't understand coaching, like you said, 20 years ago, but talk a little bit about the model. Like, what does it look like? How do folks engage with you and what's the cadence of your coaching?
Yeah. So again, kind of have two main ways right now. So we've just got a very simplified business model because again, I want to kind of role model, not complexity and stress out, right? And so what we've found is a mix of one-on-one personal and group coaching really works well. So that people are getting that level of support that feels very pertinent to them. We can dive deep. You know, yesterday I was working with a client and again, there was a lot of stress that had come up and we were able to do some really powerful work in a one-on-one. There's no way that she would have felt comfortable doing that work in a group, I'm sure, right? And it wouldn't have been as impactful. But then when it comes to group, it's so beneficial because somebody asks a question that they're struggling with that somebody else hasn't even thought of yet. And they're like, oh my gosh, you know, you've opened my eyes to that. I can be coaching somebody in a group around a topic and then getting feedback from everybody else. And they're like, oh gosh, I didn't even realize I thought that way, but now you've shifted my belief around something. So even when we're coaching in group, and somebody's just the sheer fact of somebody listening to somebody else's experience is really powerful. Now, where we, I think, are very different, and the piece that I'm super passionate about is the combination of personal development and business development. So we hold a belief that, you know, core philosophy that says business can only grow by the amount you're willing to grow yourself. And this is back from those days of me working in big law of saying we have to have personal leadership and personal development. This is massive. We need to understand what the blocks are, the psychology, you know, where is my emotional state getting in the way? Like, how do I expand this version of me so that I can fulfill on the vision, right? It's to you saying like the visionary, the vision that we want demands another version of ourselves. So we're constantly on this tension between the personal development, but of course, as we grow a firm as well, there's skills development. It's not just about mindset. So we do a lot of content around leadership, around team, around hiring. It's not just me. So these are not topics that I necessarily am teaching and coaching around. Finances, we have a bit of a slant towards like a profit first type of approach. But again, it's so that our women attorneys are building the skills. You know, how do we have those difficult conversations, right? When do we know it's time to hire? When do we know it's time to fire? And what does the marketing need to look like? What should my sales process? So very holistic, and we really cover every aspect of a business model. And typically our clients work with us, I would say anywhere about 3 to 4 years, because they're getting great results. Not because they're waiting around to get results, right? But it's like my goal, because we get very close to our clients as well, is that, you know, we're working together for a long time, because then we just have these deep relationships. And frankly, it's just a wonderful experience. But like, I know what some of their triggers are going to be. I know where the pitfalls are going to be. So it means we can dive in quickly, right?
Well, I love it. I love the holistic nature of it, where you're dealing with the mindset, finance, HR, and skills as well. And, you know, one of your calling cards, another one of your calling cards, is the $1 million question. So what is the $1 million question? Teach us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we say you don't get what you want, you get what you tolerate. So traditionally, when people are thinking about vision, like we look at adding things. And that was really what I saw when I was working in big firms, that getting to that vision was all about more responsibility, more complexity, adding things. And it was so little about subtraction. And when we're working with, we're in the solo, small law firm space, that we do a tolerations audit. The $1 million question came from, actually, it was a doctor that I was working with, that when she heard me talk about it, she did a quick audit of what she was tolerating in her medical practice. And in her particular case, she was tolerating an insurance-based practice when she really wanted to go concierge cash pay. And she's actually one of the top functional doctors in the States, highly experienced. And she said, I've done the math on this. It's costing me $1 million to not make this transition, and then hired me and my team to basically make that transition and go fully concierge and put that $1 million where it belonged, which was back in her own medical practice. So we ask our clients, you know, what are you tolerating? Let's look at this. There's some things that will be surface level that are kind of easy to identify. There are other things that we don't even realize. They're in the subconscious. But again, surface level can be, I'm tolerating, you know, a back-to-back calendar. I'm tolerating late payments. I'm tolerating no payments. I'm tolerating, a team member that's getting really disrespectful, right? So we start to unpack those tolerations and find ways to, frankly, eliminate them or reduce them at the least. so that when our attorneys are working towards their vision, they're actually, we're doing it by simplifying, not by adding more complexity. And when we, when we stop tolerating certain things, it means that we necessarily are going to be raising our standards. So again, there's a, and I, we can make sure that we've got a link to the book, because I actually unpack the whole process so that listeners can go through it. It's super practical. It gets us closer to our zone of genius and makes life a lot easier and frankly, a lot more fun as well.
Wait, what's the book called?
So it's directly on the website. So businessgrowthacademy.com, actually /book will take listeners to a direct link. But even if you just go to businessgrowthacademy.com, you'll find it there on the website.
Fantastic. Got a little bit of time for maybe one more tip. Let's say for a young female attorney who's, you know, thinking of going out on her own or just started, went out on her own, you know, what's a great tip for a young attorney making that jump?
Yeah. Oh, there are so many, but I think one of the, probably the one that can feel like the scariest, but it will make life easier. One of the big, not mistakes, but it's something that can, I think, make firms more complex than they need to be, especially when they're small, is they go out on their own and then they do the full service law firm. And it's like, we're doing a bit of this, we're doing a bit of that, you know, we're doing business, we're doing criminal, we're doing estate planning, right? And it's all across the board. And I would say for us, we really look at, you know, what are honestly the problems that you love solving all day long? I love solving business problems, but I love solving like anything that's related to money for women. Like that's a conversation I never, ever get tired of, right? So it's like, what are those problems that you really love to solve? Who are the people that are really a perfect match for you? Because everybody, you know, if we take two estate planning attorneys, whilst the estate planning process may look similar, they could be such different audiences because there's a certain demographic or an audience that you're really passionate about. So say, think about the problems and think about then who feels like a really great match, because inevitably we spend a lot of time and energy with clients. We call them champagne clients in our business, champagne, wine, and beer. I think it's probably quite self-explanatory. And the idea here, right, is that we want to be working with more champagne clients. And I think that that is one of the places when people are starting out, we want to, the tendency is to be something to everybody. And it, again, it means it gets very difficult for marketing, as you would know, because, right, that's your business. Like when we're trying to market to multiple avatars, but it's also internally, it means we have to have so many different systems. And frankly, for attorneys as well, like developing expertise and becoming really well known in a market and a jurisdiction is one of the ways to be able to command considerably higher fees as well.
Well, it's a great question. And we went through this exercise when we picked our niche. And people always say, like, how did you end up only doing digital marketing and only doing it for attorneys? And about 5 years ago, we had two big categories. We had attorneys who we'd worked with for 15 or 16 years, and we had seminar and event folks. And we were doing big Tony Robbins seminars with a Shark Tank guy and a guy selling stock training and a guy selling how to flip your house training. And, yeah. You know, the full day events at the local convention center. And so for us, like, the decision was a little bit easier because we really liked working with the attorneys. They were really business people. And one thing that they were very good at was paying their bills. And yes. The seminar and event guys were kind of like the modern day carnival barkers. They'd roll in town, and if they sold enough stock courses, they'd pay their bills. If not, they'd move on. And next time they came back to Philadelphia, they'd change the name of the conference. But, On a more serious note, you know, I'm involved in a mastermind as well called Seven Figure Agency. Shout out to Josh Nelson. And we've been very successful since we picked our niche. And a lot of the young folks who come into the group ask, you know, how do we pick our niche? Like, we've got the traditional agency. We service everybody. We see how much success everybody's having being specialist in one area, in one niche. And one of the things that I wish I'd thought through, and fortunately it worked out, and you pointed to it exactly, is you're going to be spending a lot of time with these people.
Yes.
So I tell people, you know, go to, like, for us, you know, I was at a conference last week in New Orleans, and there was 550 lawyers. And today I've been on a call, you know, three or four calls with attorneys, and having lunch tomorrow with the Florida Lawyers Network. We have these mini lunches. So I'm going to be with four or five attorneys. So invest some time when you're picking that niche, and, you know, make sure that you know, and you don't necessarily need to pick the champagne clients. You know, Vanessa likes the champagne clients. I'm happy with these attorney clients, but, you know, a lot of my guys in my seven-figure agency, they actually like the roofers or the plumbers, and they're much happier not putting a sports coat on. And it's funny because when we're at seven-figure agency, there's like three of us who wear a sports coat, and the three who wear a sports coat are all the three guys who target the lawyer niche. Like, we're just sports coat lawyer people. We're comfortable in that environment. But a lot of the guys just want to wear shorts and a ball cap, and that's what they wear.
And that's fine.
And guess what? That's what the plumbers and air conditioners wear to their national convention. So that's a really great piece of advice. Well, we're going to go to the short snappers, and I did give Vanessa a little bit of a heads up, but I always like to throw a couple curveballs. So,
oh, cool. Here we go.
we'll make the first one easy. One of the things I love to learn from successful people like Vanessa is, what are some of the apps you use or techniques for personal productivity?
So this one, honestly, it's a great question. And I'm going to be super honest about it right now. I have slipped on some of my habits around this. So I'm actually like reining myself back in as a human being, because I post-it notes. I love post-it notes. However, post-it notes get messy.
Yes, they
do. And I found myself kind of going back down and was like, gosh, I've got to stop this. You know, all these post-it notes everywhere. So actually why that's important is I still prefer non-digital productivity things. I find that the written, writing things down actually really helps me. And so there is a journal that I love, and I've got sitting right here on my desk, that's called the Oak Journal. And it was developed by an entrepreneur, I think in the, an EOer. So I know we've talked about EOS, and some of those great entrepreneurs have created it. Yeah. And what I love about it is it has gratitude. So we can practice, you know, gratitude, establish the vision for the day, kind of like the top three things for the day. And it's written down, so I can actually check things off, which I still get a massive kick out of to this day. Putting a line through something.
By the way, I suck. I mean, this is just a sample, but I do that too. And I just have to take the sticky notes.
Look,
if you're listening to the audio, I'm showing a bunch of sticky notes.
Yeah, and me too. Look,
if I have the sticky note pad on my desk, I write these little notes, and it's terrible. I'm looking for we did this as a book club. I've mentioned this on a couple of the podcasts. Great book from Brian Tracy called Eat That Frog. And essentially that's that concept of write down the three things that are the most important things for your day. And sometimes they're the biggest projects you got to get a start on. Sometimes there's something you've got to brief somebody else on because they've got to do the work. But if you don't get it to them first thing in the morning, they're not going to get it accomplished.
Totally.
So there's a great book, Eat That Frog, and a great strategy of writing down those three big frogs. And the concept frog is like, if you don't eat them when they're little tadpoles, meaning if you don't do the task when it's full and the deadline looms larger, the task becomes more and more ominous. And then you really can start procrastinating.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. And we said the same thing. It's always three things to stop overwhelm. And what I say, the rule of three will set you free. Because it's like,
I love
three
that.
Big rocks, right? Like three big priorities for the year, three big priorities for the quarter, three for the month, three for the week, and three for the day. And if it's a massively stretched, stressed day, then we go to one. Yeah. But that rule of three, not 26 things.
Yeah, and the three big rocks also is part of EOS.
Totally. So,
what are some of the blogs, podcasts, or YouTubes that you subscribe to that when it hits your feed, you know, it's the first one you listen to every day?
I know, right? So interestingly, I am really working on less consuming right now and more creating, because I know I can get lost in them. So YouTube is not something I have used a lot, but now with the relaunch of my podcast, it's going to be on YouTube. So it's kind of, I'm like, oh, okay. So I need to start to wake up to this. But the podcast that I have been really enjoying recently is Diary of a CEO. I have been pretty much binge listening to that. Lots of things around health as well and longevity. So I go off and play tennis. I've got nearly a 20-minute drive now to get to my court. So that's what I find is my podcasting time.
Fantastic. Is Diary of a CEO, is it a parable? Like, is it told in a story format or is it just a...
So he... I think it's the fastest growing podcast in the States at this point in time. He's actually a Brit, but he's like between England and the States, and he's obviously a big entrepreneur. Yeah. And he has got some really big names on.
Oh, so it's guest.
So it's guest.
I'll check that one out. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned tennis. Vanessa and I were chatting before. We're both doubles tennis players. So if a ball's coming straight at you, are you backhand or forehand?
Gosh, I had one straight in the body today. And I think I did something really weird. So if it's coming straight at me, probably backhand.
And you win the toss. Do you choose to serve or return?
Oh, gosh, that one really depends. Probably return when we're in leagues. So I can kind of warm up and get over some of those nerves.
If you get that early break, it's always a win. I agree.
Right.
And who's your NFL team?
I'm not an NFLer.
Who's your football team? British football, nothing. No sports. Tennis.
No, I'm tennis. I am tennis. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, people used to ask me my team 4 or 5 years ago. And I'd say, well, to be honest, my favorite sports team was the Bryan brothers. Those guys were 6'4", identical twins, born in California, grew up playing tennis. One was a lefty, one was a righty, and they won 115 or 117 titles and won Wimbledon and the Olympics, and they won all four Grand Slam titles many times. And yeah. I loved watching these guys because I was a doubles tennis player.
Yeah, and I love watching tennis. So I've got the tennis channel now so I can track. And of course, we've got the French Open is about to start. So
yeah, lots I can't of good wait. Tennis. Could be Rafa's last French Open.
And it could be
Tune in this year. Couple more. What's your best business books that you recommend to your clients and the young attorneys?
Yeah, so the one book, and it's not necessarily business, but again, this comes back to the personal development side of things that I get people started with, is The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. I don't know if you've come across it, Jay. It's timeless. The concept inside that book is an easy read as well. I mean, but yeah, there's so much wealth in there. The concept that Gay has established is all about that we all have an upper limit. And I can see this is always true. Like, we have an upper limit of performance. And again, it's back to mindset and where we stop ourselves and kind of where we might sabotage, create distractions. And it works for personal and business. So that is the book that I recommend to all of our clients to get started with.
Fantastic. And last question is an easy one. Where can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so at businessgrowthacademy.com, straight there on the website. They'll always find some goodies there as well, things to download. And again, I'm on all social channels as well. So Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and a great conversation. Very inspiring and entertaining. Good luck with your tennis. And again, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Well, I hope we get on a court at one point. Have some mixed dubs going on. I'll have you as my partner, though, not opposite the net.
If you come next year to TGR Live, I promise you we'll get a great mixed doubles game.
Oh, there we go. There's a date.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Vanessa.
Thank you for listening to the 10 Golden Rules of Internet Marketing for Law Firms podcast. Please send questions and comments to podcast@tengoldenrules.com. That is podcast@tengoldenrules.com.